Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and this is a summer feature of The Sound of Economics recorded on the road as part of the Reopening Europe project. We traveled more than 2,700 kilometers through the Netherlands, Germany, France, Austria, Slovenia, and Italy to collect voices from the ground between the 12th and the 27th of June, during the weeks when the borders were reopening after the COVID-19 lockdown.
And at one moment they closed off the borders.
Even the one with the salary, they lost the job.
Had to close the restaurant, so it was a little bit stressful.
Nous avons pu travailler avec les partenaires des différents pays.
Afgelopen woensdag kregen we richting van de wet, hoor.
Finalmente hanno riaperto i confini.
In this episode, you will be listening to an interview with Antje von Davids, the CEO of the outdoors gears company Wouda. We met her on the 17th of June 2020 in Tettnang, near the Lake Constance, at the border between Germany and Switzerland, where her family company is located. The team of reopening was the first external visitors group to be admitted at the company headquarters after the lockdown. Antje told me about the effect of COVID-19 on her company, on retailers and consumers' behavior, and she told me her vision for a post-pandemic economy which should work for the common good.
I'm Antje von Davids. I'm the CEO of VD Sport. We are an equipper for outdoor equipment. So we do functional clothing, tents, backpacks, sleeping bags, panniers for bikes, everything you need outdoors. And I'm leading this company since 12 years. I overtook it from my father, who founded this company. And since that time, we have turned around the company to follow a really, really sustainable path. So everything we do is in the best intent to be socially, ecologically, and economically in balance.
That's great. Thank you. We are going to get back to the issue about sustainability throughout the interview, because, of course, this is one of the things I would like to go a little bit more in depth. But as a first question, I would like to ask you, what is a border for you?
What is a border? When I hear the word border, I have a feeling of a dislike. It's border between people, border between emotions. A border is something that that hinders the flow from something. So a border is not something positive in my value frame.
And during these exceptional times of the COVID pandemic, the borders have been closed. How did you personally live this exceptional situation, but also how your company has been going through that very exceptional crisis?
We are a company that has employees from other countries around Germany, just a few, but still they had suddenly difficulties to come here to work. And around 40% of the products that we deliver are outside Germany. So we had two problems with the closed borders. But the main problem for us was that the shops closed down too. So that was way more difficult for us, because then we couldn't sell our shops or products. So from one day to the other, we didn't have any turnover.
So basically it was not so much about the global value chain for the production side. It was more of an issue of distribution and demand side.
Exactly. Throughout the entire corona crisis, the supply chain has never been the issue. The issue for us, the really, really big challenge, has been and still is the shops, the stores, the consumption of the goods.
And when it comes still specifically to the corona side, did you observed any change in within the crisis itself? Like we've been having a lot of online shopping, for example. Is that something that you've seen, you observed in terms of disruption, or has there been any kind of business model change that you've been discussing or implementing during the crisis?
So we were focusing a lot on what can we do online? How can we shift to online? How can we introduce more tools to support also our mortar and brick dealers with online tools to get them traffic for their services of delivery. But in the beginning of the Corona crisis, even the online sales were completely down. So the first weeks was everything down. And then with the store opening in Germany, the digital sales started to. And then what was really exciting for us that I don't know how it's in Great Britain or wherever, but in Germany and Austria and Switzerland, bike was boom. Everybody was out on the bikes. And we don't sell bikes, but we sell bike equipment. So bike went up like this. And since 2 or 3 weeks, since people can go outdoors, can go into the mountains, can go to the huts, can sleep everywhere else, outdoor articles for the outdoor equipment are also more asked for. So since 2 or 3 weeks, we have normal business again.
Just one last question about the actual crisis and the production line. Was there, you say that everything stopped in terms of selling to a certain extent. Did you stop the production at some point?
In the beginning of the Corona crisis, we sat together and said, okay, we have to build a scenario. What do we believe in? How is this crisis going to be? And we looked back at the financial crisis 2009 and we said, okay, at that time, outdoor was booming afterwards because the people didn't make big travels and you cannot do in the Corona crisis. They didn't have so big monies. They didn't do big investments, but they spent money on outdoor equipment. That was one point. And we looked to China and said, okay, China has closed down for 2 months. Then they gradually opened up. We just believe that it will be like this in Europe. And that's the scenario we did. And that's why we never closed down completely. We only had 30% workers in short time. The rest was here or in home office. And we never canceled production. We said we talked with our production partners and said, hey, can you deliver a little bit later? Can we pay a little bit later because we don't have any income? But we didn't cancel anything. We just believed in a very positive scenario. And
that was
a good decision at that time.
Yeah. And when it comes to the people that had to work on shorter time, you had support from the federal government?
Yes, we had 30% of our people that worked in short time for 3 weeks, or for 3 to 4 weeks. And for that time, we had support from the government.
And also the company itself received the support from the government in the exceptional circumstances?
We didn't ask for. We said, okay, we believe in this positive scenario. And if this comes true, we don't need any help. We believe that we will have a big loss of about 10% of the turnovers. That makes around 10 million euro at the end of the year. But this is something that we can shoulder ourselves. So we didn't ask for help.
That's very interesting because it brings me to the next set of questions that are linked to the Corona crisis, but they are a little bit, going towards a little bit more broader discussion, which is the question about the future. You clearly say that you've been set up a quite optimistic scenario about at least the sector, the industry where you work for. It will be interesting to understand how do you see this reopening of, in practical terms, how in these weeks that have been very special, where slowly things have a similarity to being normal, but they are not really back to normal completely yet. So how you're living this exact moment of the reopening? You told us that this is the first time that you're having
external
visitors, which is very, very much in the spirit of what we are doing here in this very moment in our project of reopening Europe. Yeah. So I'm interested to understand how you are actually living this very week, because it's very much a moment.
It's a strange week because it seems like normality. No, it seems like a normal life. But then again, like when you came in and I tried to shake your hand, I was like, oh my God, I still can't, because everything this week feels so normal. Last week I was on vacation, first week back, and we have a canteen here, and up up to last week, it was like this, that only two persons could sit at one table. And today I went into the canteen and the tables were full of people. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? Are you crazy? And they were like, no rule, new rules. We are allowed to sit together. And I was like, okay, that feels weird. And such experiences I have over and over again. Like you today, you come in and I think like, okay, everything is normal. And then, oh no, I don't, I can't shake hands. And also from the business side, it feels kind of normal because yes, outdoor is booming now. But on the other side, we know that we are going to lose many or quite a few brick and mortar customers because they won't survive the crisis, which will affect us too. So it's a strange phase between two worlds. I have the impression.
Indeed, and this comes back to my original question about the online side. I mean, like, is there a disruption in the longer term about the way sales are going to be made? And of course, there is the Amazon case that was booming during the crisis. But what is going to be? Is there going to be alternative models in the way retail is going to be made? Are there things that you are thinking in terms of innovation and disruption in this? In this part of the business?
Since 10, 15 years, there was a shift from brick and mortar sales to online sales. At the moment, we were doing around 40% online. Not ourselves, but we have online dealers. And I think that Corona will enhance this, or will strengthen this shift towards online, because quite a few of the brick and mortar customers won't survive. So for us, this means that we think into models. How can we directly with the end consumer have more direct connection? There are not due to Corona, but around this time of Corona, there are a lot of marketplaces out there that big customers like Sportcheck or other big German customers, they have marketplaces where the brand directly sells to the end consumer, but on the platform of Sportcheck. So this is something that we started to enter before Corona, which is good now. And I think Corona will give this direction a further push. This direction that it's more online and it's more directly from brand to end consumer.
And in terms of the future, again, because I'm very interested about the visions that entrepreneurs like you might have about what is going to happen in the future. And we are all as citizens, we are in this moment, and this very moment, we are still saying nothing. I mean, things are going to be back to normal, but not exactly as they used to be. If you were not only to, it's not like a prediction that I'm asking to you, but this I'm also interested to see, but more like your vision. If you would have to say, what can we take and can we learn from this moment, this collective shock that we've been living? How can we take this for changing certain things that it can be in the economy, or it can be in the lifestyles of people, what will be your vision?
Yeah. So coming from the small things, I think what we all experienced is that it's perfect to work from home office. Maybe some people don't find it perfect, but at VD it was perfect. And we are, as you know, at the very south far end of Germany. So every time we travel, we have to travel very, very far. And we are not connected very well with big, we don't have an airport here. We don't have a good train connection. It's hard to travel from here. And now we do everything online. We do online congresses. We do online big meetings. It's perfect. We did our sales meeting with 300 people online. So we won't travel so much as before. And I think this will this is something that is good for the earth. Less travel, less CO2 emissions. I think that also, I think it will have a positive effect on the culture of many companies, because I think up to this point, many companies couldn't imagine that it will work, that people work, that you can trust people to work from home. We at VD, since 12 years, we are very much working on a culture of trust, and people have been working in home office since many, many years. And so for us, it was just a shift, and everybody was working from home, and from day one, this was a good experience for us. And I think this good experience of trust, that you can trust people, even they work from home, will have a positive effect on companies, because I believe you learn trust by crisis like this. And I think that employees from now on will also make the demands that they will work more from home.
Right. And when it comes to the broader aspects, like, for example, sustainability and climate, yeah. You mentioned something about people wanting to ride bikes now, or, you know, experience from, in my case, there's been that in Brussels, a lot of people were turning into gardening, even if they had apartment, in order to grow their own food and stuff like that. So it looks almost like that the slowdown has been, at least for temporary, has been making people more aware about other issues. And at Vaude, I mean, and you personally, you've been very engaged. I mean, you are very engaged in sustainable development, sustainability, and this kind of, you know, you're very active in the concept of economy for common good. Which I would like also to explore, but maybe first about the sustainability aspect. What do you think about the impact of these on sustainability, or what do you think it should be?
I think that looking before Corona, I have seen in the last 2-3 years before Corona that more and more that the group of people who consciously think about their buying decisions is growing, very, very big. So it was a big support for our sustainable way, and people want to buy with a good conscience, and the people that want to buy with a good conscience are getting more and more. And I think with Corona, this group of people is growing immensely, because Corona makes people think about life, makes people think about how should we live, how should business work, how should products be done. So I'm expecting, and I can already feel it also in figures, that the demand for sustainable products will grow immensely through Corona. I think the question is how politics is going to set the ground rules to support a more sustainable business. Because at the moment, sustainability in businesses is voluntarily. If you do it, you have more work, you have more costs, and it's your own risk. In my opinion, we should use the Corona crisis and the money that is being spent on reinforcing the businesses throughout Europe should be used to lead them into a sustainable direction.
And can you explain us the concept of economy for common good that yeah. you've been...
If you do sustainable business, okay, what is, I'll come yeah. around. Sustainability, yeah. What is sustainability? Something often I hear, okay, can you afford to be sustainable? And just to think in these terms is so weird, because sustainability is, in my opinion, nothing different from your responsibility as an entrepreneur, as a business. Because what is sustainability? Sustainability takes care that you, as with your business, do not harm nature or mankind. So, and I think this is your task to take care of that. And to say it is too expensive to take care of the environment is weird. So why is it like this? Why are we in a system, or why is the system like this, that it is on your own risk to be sustainable as a business? It is because you are only rated by financial figures. Everything that counts in, for example, for taxes or for if you are if you have shareholders, are financial aspects. You are not rated by your democratic, social, ecological engagement. And this is missing. And in my opinion, and in the opinion of the economy for the common good, this should be something that should be added in the rating of businesses. So there's an common good balance sheet that rates businesses, and at the end you have a number of points that rates your engagement towards your employees, your production partners, your the people that give you money, towards the government and the society. And this should be also something that should matter in terms of taxes, in terms of the tasks of businesses.
So your proposal, how would such a proposal be formulated in terms of if you will have to elaborate a policy or a regulation on that kind of thing? Would be what kind of regulation or how would it look like?
Okay, in a really
ideal world. Yes.
Every company should have to do something like a balance sheet of the common good, because then as a customer, you could look into this balance sheet and you would see, oh, this company has minus 2000 points. Oh, that is really bad. I don't want to buy at a company that doesn't overtake responsibility. Oh, this company has plus 1000. So this is really good. So it would give the customer, the consumer, a good feeling about what is really, a look behind the scenes. It would make it possible to judge for yourself as consumer, as if with my buying decision at this company I overtake responsibility or somebody else is suffering for it. This would be step one. Step two would be, for example, if you have taxes in German the Mehrwertsteuer. What is it? It's
I don't speak German, unfortunately. But we have German speakers in the office, so I can ask for this.
I don't get the term at the moment, but this is 19%. Mm-hmm. And if every company would have a balance sheet of the common good, you could say, for example, every company that is in minus has to have higher tax. Everybody that is in the plus have to have lower, because they already overtake the cost that they are doing. The others are making business on the costs of the whole society, so they have to pay more. This could be one.
So basically, you are proposing a reform of the tax system based on the an index or balance sheet for the common good.
This could be one of the many, many things that you could do with it.
And how do you think that the coronavirus crisis we could somehow push for something on this direction?
As I said before, what I really feel, and you can see it in every study at the moment, is that the consumer is getting more and more conscious. So they are asking more and more for good production, for good businesses. It's the chance for politics to make in legislation now that is leading into this direction. And when I see all the demands that we have from politics, in 2 weeks I'll do a webinar with somebody from the Europarlament on the economy for the common goods, for example, next to many other demands towards us from politics. I see that the interest in alternative models of economy is rising on all levels, on levels here, Baden-Württemberg, but also Germany, but also Europe. So I think because if you want to fulfill the sustainable development goals, if you want to get a step further, you need more instruments in our economic system. And VOD is interesting for politicians in this way, because here we can show very successful that an economy of the common good is nothing against economy, is future oriented and is successful.
Now we are getting a lot of support, like with recovery plans and so on, to the economy, but it's the moment where we need to reflect about the kind of economy that we want in the future. What do we do? Do we want to continue to finance the same kind of fossil fuel based economy, or do we want to change and disrupt the system? This is an open question, I think, that we are having in Europe at the moment.
Yeah. Well, in Germany, we don't have the Abwrackprämie. This was the this tool before that you got money to buy yourself a new car. So we don't have it this time. And this was a positive signal because this was the greatest fear of everybody that was looking towards a more future-oriented politics. We don't have it in Germany. We have now less taxes for the consumer, and we have a more broader investment in electricity-based mobility. But I think that also the crisis shows that the companies that do business in a sustainable way are the companies that survive this crisis much better. And this is also what we can show with VOD. And this also makes me positive and optimistic that politics should go and should look at this and should re-regulate the framework. Because if you do business in a sustainable way, you do it with partners. You have trustful partnerships with long-living partnerships that are not ended with a crisis and you cancel everything. No, you talk to each other because you know each other since several years. You have worked together and you talk together and you find new solutions. This is why we never had a problem with the supply chain. And this is also why on the other side, we didn't have the problem that our customers canceled everything with us. No, we talked to each other and we said, okay, we will deliver later and we just deliver a part and yes, you can pay 6 weeks later. So we talked to each other and we found solutions. And this is a foundation of sustainability. If you look at other brands, at the big American brands in our sector that are very figure driven and numbers driven, as soon as the crisis set in, they canceled everything. And now they have difficulties to rise after the crisis. This is one example. The other example is with our culture of trust here within the company. This helped us so much within the crisis because 200 people that worked in home offices from one day to the other, that was no problem for us because we've experienced it before.
How did you do with the production? Because it's easy to send people home and work from home if you have I don't know, sales or management or other parts of the company. But what about the manufacturing?
The manufacturing was working throughout the crisis. In the beginning, we said, okay, the jobbers shouldn't work anymore. So we sent the jobbers home, but our full-time workers, they were here. Plus, everybody else from different parts of our company that didn't have any work anymore because they are working in the event sector and you couldn't do any events were also helping out in the manufacturing. So our manufacturing was working throughout the crisis.
That's very lucky as well, because in some countries manufacturing had to stop. I'm originally Italian, and in Italy the situation has been a little bit different from that one. And this is one of the things we're going to try to discover on our Italian part of the trip. Yeah,
this is something what I find really interesting because we are a company that is not only in Germany, but we have we also distribute in other European countries. And the lockdown in Germany was not so bad as in other countries. We were able to produce here. We were able to work here. And after 3 weeks or after some weeks, the shops were reopening and we could deliver. So we never had a complete turnover, a loss of turnover. We were on a very low level, but it was rising soon, very, very soon rising again. In many other countries like Italy, like Spain, like France, there's zero. There was absolutely zero. And not only for a few weeks, but for much longer. But if you look around, you see that the Germans are the ones that are protesting against the measures of Corona. People are going on the street and say it's against our human rights, how we are treated within the Corona crisis. And I'm really, I think this is strange because, I think in Germany, we really, well led throughout the crisis.
We're going towards the end of the interview, but I want to ask again another question about the future, because it's one of my obsessions, I have to say, to understand how people think about the not the next 2 years or the next 1 year, but the next 20 years. And when speaking about the next 20 years, what do you think is going to be the future of work? Because we mentioned just slightly about the manufacturing and the fact that in the end of the day, there wasn't really a big disruption for you. But in 20 years' time, how do you see your workshop where things are, the gears are being crafted?
I guess you hope that I see everything done in Europe, but I don't see this for our branch. It's the textile industry is very much made by hand. And since over 30 years, the entire textile industry has been moved to Asia. And since that time, the entire supply chain is in Asia, not only the production sites, but also material, the machines, the chemicals, everything is there. Also the workers. So we do around 20% in Germany and Europe, and we try to do more because it's so much easier for us. But for around 80% of the type of products we do, like tents, like functional clothing, there are no production sites here. And if there are production sites, there is the textiles come from Asia. So I don't see a shift, a big shift towards Germany or towards Europe. Also on the cost side, it's a big manual part of the product, is manual work. If you want to have European products, a functional jacket would cost 100% more, at least. Show me the consumer that accepts 100% more. We have difficulties. Most of the time, the costs that we have through sustainable materials, through our fair production in Asia, is we can't give to the consumer because he doesn't accept a raise of prices of 20%.
And what about other kind of innovation that could happen between now and 20 years? For example, when it comes to the digital side, 3D printing, robots, and so on.
This is a side, and there are developments. But I think what is more fitting to Corona and the times we're in is, and what we really work hard on is the whole topic of post growth. The idea of post growth. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Earth, you see, okay, we are using 1.7 Earths out there. In the middle of the year, we have this overshoot day where from that point on, we all use, resources that are not renewable. We are eating up our planet. And to know this, You have to think about how can we produce products from tomorrow. We need products. We need less products, and we need products that use only very small resources. So this is something that we reflect very hard on. And for example, multi-use products on the one side. On the other side, products that are repairable. How can we help to repair? How can we do products that are from recycled materials, from bio-based materials, because they're renewable? And this is something that we really invest highly on, and where we do a lot of innovation also, that we have trousers, for example, functional trousers based on castor oil beans instead of functional material based on raw oil. Stuff like that, we're innovating really highly. And I think that Corona will open the eyes of many customers too, of many consumers, that this is what they want. Because what you see out there at the moment is people, except for the outdoor part, but people are not willing to buy new clothes. They say, I realize I have a lot. I don't need something new. So I think that Corona will make this area of post consumption come earlier than expected, because people think more about what do I spend my money on? What do I really need? I need less. And especially in our sector, in the textile industry, there's so much overconsumption. In 17 years, the the worldwide production of clothes has been doubled. So it's crazy what we overproduce worldwide in clothing, and Corona has shown people they don't need so much.
I have a reflection on this because I'm very fascinated. My mom actually used to work in textile in Italy, and a lot of the business, I mean, I've been observing throughout my adolescence and then when I was growing up from far away through the lens of her job, exactly this shift of the production from, especially in Italy, there is still quite some textile, but it has, I mean, like everything has been moving away from there. But also one of the things that, she has been observing has been like the fact that more is produced at lower price, but the quality of the textile industry has been
going down.
Yeah. And obviously that's not the case for technical gears.
Decathlon, for example, that is just like an Aldi or a supermarket for outdoor clothes.
Yeah, exactly. And from this point of view, I join your thought about the fact that there has been a model of let's say obsolescence of each of the clothes that is very, very fast, which is not sustainable in the broader scale of both environmental but also production as well and so on. So I totally understand that kind of logic. It's a very interesting reflection that you made. But then on the other side, when you spoke about the actual production, because of course this is also one of the other big themes related to globalization but also innovation, on one side is like not to be too dependent on one single part of the world. So there is this part, and the other part is innovation going to change again or reverse certain things? Like it might be cheaper to produce things if you have 3D printing or a robot in your factory here, and you might not need the global value chains of the past if technology will go in a way that all you need is actually some machines that will do everything.
That's a very theoretical scenario at the moment, because especially the textile industry is not very far in automatization. Mm-hmm. This is something that we do in our own manufacturing here, that we spend a lot of money in 3D printing and stuff like that. And also we do 3D printing for spare parts. But the technical level in the production sites is low, and the volume of single textile products is too low to have this grade of automation in this industry. So this is far, far away, and it's not even even though we're on this way, we're on the way of 3D development of production, and we are the way on working on this in with our partners in Asia. But I think in other industries like cars or whatever, this is much, much more a scenario that is realistic, because the numbers of per products are so much lower in textile, in our branch especially.
I understand. So basically your prediction is that there is still going to be labor intensive, human labor intensive kind of work, even in the near future. We're not speaking about in 100 years, of course, but in a generation time, that industry will still have a human component.
Yeah, I'm totally convinced of this. Adidas had a company like this for shoes here in Germany. They closed it down. So they had this example of 3D printing for shoes, and I think it's closed down now.
Okay.
It will not be efficient in the near future. And I think it's also a positive thought of this, because we always see the negative sides of globalization, especially in the textile sector. We see Rana Plaza, Bangladesh, breaking down buildings and people dying. there can and there sometimes is a positive part in globalization, especially in the textile sector, because it's a sector that people can learn very quickly and can evolve very quickly, can be the first and is often the first industry that comes into a country and gives people work and helps people out of poverty. But only if prices are fair, if costs are fair, if the work is humanely organized. And this is where we put a big focus on. We're a member of the Fairwear Foundation and we really work hard with every production site to have good working conditions. And I think this is where we in the textile industry have to put the focus on.
Thank you. Last question. I don't want to take too much of your time, but with the Reopening Europe, I started with a question about what is a border for you. And we are exploring through the borders, the closing and the opening and the closing of the borders. We are also exploring the issue of identity and how people define borders, not only in let's say an administrative way, but also on a more personal, but also borders in terms of, it can be a lot of what you said about actual your business model, the philosophy of Aude, the economy for common goods. It's also a lot a discourse about where the borders and limits of things are in and out. So I would like to conclude with a question about your own borders. I mean, how do you see borders in a more metaphysical way, if I may ask such a philosophical question, and also how those borders, if those borders or how those borders are defining your identity?
When I was at university, I tried to find my way in life. I tried to find my place in life. I wanted to be part of overtaking responsibility for a good planet, and I wanted to find my way. And I was working at NGOs for traineeship, at media, at cultural organization. I was traveling around in the worldwide. And then I came back, I came home. And home was never home for me because my parents don't come from here. We are migrants from North Germany. Mm. So we were always looked upon a little bit skeptical. We were an entrepreneur in a region full of farmers. And I never defined this as home because I always felt like a stranger here because we were not from here. But then I found out, okay, this is my home, but it's not the place where I am. It's Faude, and it's the values that we can live here. It's the community of people with the same mind, and it's the vision of a better world that we all want to work very hard on. So and it's the chance to create a better future. This is my home. And where do I see borders? How do I define borders? This is something, for me, borders are there to overcome. And this is why I love to be an entrepreneur, because this is what makes you strong. Be a pioneer that overcomes borders, that shows that borders are only in your mind. And you can find solutions with a good team, with a great spirit. You can overcome borders. And so borders are something to be overcome.
Amazing. Thank you so much. This brings us to the end of this episode, which was part of the Reopening Europe summer feature of The Sound of Economics. I would like to remind you that you can find more podcasts, video and information about our road trip on the website www.reopeningeurope.com. On the 2nd of September, during the Bruegel annual meetings, we will launch a documentary from Reopening Europe. You can keep up to date with the launch and the program of the annual meetings on www.bam.bruegel.org. Thank you for tuning in to The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.